Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Greetings from the hill country of Central Texas. This is the Revolution in Military Affairs podcast. We know that there are many podcasts competing for your time and attention. We hope to bring you the content and guests to be your go-to podcast for the study of war, warfare, and strategy.
Welcome back to the Revolution of Military Affairs podcast. Today's conversation is going to be terrific. I'm really excited about it. Today we have Dominika Kunitova. She is a senior researcher at the Center for Security Studies at ETH Zurich. Her research focuses on the military applications of emerging technologies and their impact on international security and the character of warfare. So we have her on, because she's a fantastic researcher, for one thing, but also because as I was doing some research of my own, because, again, I'm not a drone hater, but because I am a drone realist, as I like to say. And as I was doing research, I came across two of her papers that I found absolutely terrific. And these papers and this general theme is fit really well with some of the previous guests that we've had on to this point in season three of the podcast so far. So I thought we would have her on. So I'm going to mention these papers by name real quick. So bear with me as I stumble through reading the names of these papers. And then I'll say... Actually, let me say thank you first and to Dominika, and then I'll read the names of the paper. So, Dominika, thank you for coming on.
Thank you very much for having me. I really appreciate this opportunity to talk about drones and being realistic about this technology.
Yeah. All right. Sorry about almost putting the cart in front of the horse and forgetting to say thanks. All right. So, the papers... The papers that I think are really useful here that Dominika has published recently that are really good that we need to talk about today, or that are going to guide the conversation. We're not just going to talk about papers, but they're the guideposts for the conversation. So the first one that I came upon here is the war in Ukraine shows the game-changing effect of drones depends on the game. When I first read that title, I was like, oh yeah, this is perfect. And so that was published in the Bulletin of the Atomic Scientists, which I also found was fascinating, this article was published in that journal. And so that was published in volume 79, number 2, in 2023 of the Bulletin of the Atomic Scientists. So that was the first one. That one was fascinating. And then also Dominika published Drones Have Boots, Learning from Russia's War in Ukraine. That was published in Contemporary Security Policy, which, again, if you're a international relations scholar, that's kind of one of your bread and butter journals. But if you're not, that's a really good journal to always be looking at if you're not into the international relations field. But That one was published in volume 44, number 4, in 2023 also. And so that one is I don't know which one I like better. They're both terrific. So anyhow, those are the two articles that really got the juices flowing. And I think as a drone realist, not a drone hater, and somebody that's really interested in the limitations of drones, because there's been so much hype coming out over the past, since basically like 2020 at the end of the Nagorno-Karabakh war about what drones supposedly are going to be able to do in the future. I always find it refreshing to find people that are not saying, no, these people are wrong, but saying, hey, there are limitations to what drones can do. And I think that Dominika's papers do a really good job doing that. So I've been talking too long. So what I'm going to do is ask a couple of framing questions here to help drive the discussion and get Dominika give Dominika the floor, because that's why we brought her on. So I think the first thing here is, I'll start with like the title here on this first paper here, Dominique. And you say that going with the title, the war in Ukraine shows the game changing effects of drones depend on the game. So, Dominique, what do you mean by that? And within there, you talk. Let me just start with that, and then I'll get to the subsequent question from there. So,
well, Amos, thank you so much for your kind introduction of my recent papers. And straight to your question, it basically a result of me struggling with this endless debate about whether drones are revolutionary or evolutionary, and how to not take sides in this debate and kind of reconcile and make sense of what is the actual impact of drones. Yep. And basically my main point of also choosing this title is to point to the drone diversity, that there is just not one drone, one mission, but you have different sizes, different drone capabilities that are used for different missions. So, and that's basically nuancing the hype, as you mentioned, about these drones, that this article is a result of kind of my fascination with the sudden interest in drone technology, especially with the war in Ukraine. So if I may develop on this point, is basically in the previous two decades, let's say, of drone wars, they were really linked with the medium altitude, long endurance, those large aircraft-sized drones in asymmetric operations against international terrorism. And what we see in Ukraine, that is a stark contrast using this small drone platform. And I believe this is like the new phase of drone warfare. And then suddenly, they are actually useful in a conflict where neither side has air superiority. However, it doesn't mean that they are revolutionary just by this simple fact. And so this is what I wanted to bring and discuss in, like, as you said, like very realistic lenses.
What is it about them that prevents them from being revolutionary and makes them evolutionary instead?
I don't think that makes them evolutionary, but okay, I can give you a whole list of reasons.
Yeah.
But I would say that this whole framing of the debate is not useful.
Yeah.
Because we should start asking first, what is the mission that the drone is supposed to accomplish?
Yeah.
And the revolutionary label for any technology, let's say, it's kind of misleading, because it takes the concept from the revolution, the revolution and military affairs debate, which is really like a long-term over time impact of a new technology being introduced on the battlefield. And here we are talking about basically a single conflict. So it's a little bit stretched, let's say, this point. So I would say that drones are very useful when the game, let's say, or the mission is to either delay an offensive, destroy infrastructure, exhaust air defenses, intimidate or demoralize your enemy. However, they are not having beyond tactical effects. Let's say they are not able to take territory, destroy some strongholds, or even push the aggressors back home from a territory, or deliver some decisive victory and end the conflict. So that's like very mismanaged expectations. That's the big picture question. Yeah. What is the mission that the drone is supposed to accomplish? And to your question of why I would say that we are like expecting too much from these drones when people are saying they are revolutionary, is well, I would provide probably four more reasons. Hmm. Well, first is that these airborne vehicles, they are very vulnerable to weather conditions, for instance. Mm-hmm. They don't have any self-defenses. So just temperature dropping by a few degrees, their battery suffers because they are like consumer electronics if you're talking about these small drones. And their endurance suffers. The wind, mountainous terrain, this all affects the operational success of a drone. Then if spotted by air defense, like enemies, air defenses, electronic warfare, it's rare that a drone has an anti-jammer on it. Mm-hmm. Because if we are talking, I'm sure we're going to go back to that point of the cost, but that's like the main comparative advantage of these small drones. But if you start putting on these anti-jammers, for instance, the main advantage of the cost is being basically canceled because all these new, more performing add-ons, like sensors for night vision, protection against the jamming, that increases the cost of the platform. So that's important. Then I know that we are talking about uncrewed systems, mm-hmm. but the success of a drone mission very much depends on its human operator, how skilled they are. Like if you remember some statistics from the battlefield in Ukraine, if you had a skilled special operation forces, for instance, the success rate of operator sending the first person view drone into like an attack mission is between 70% to 80%. But if it's some newly formed unit, the success rate drops down to 10% or 20%, which is a huge difference. So not many people realize the importance of a human behind the drone. And as you said, you're gonna have Jack in your other podcast episode. He has a terrific paper demonstrating just this, that you have a drone operator on the battlefield, but you need another humans defending him. You have another set of skilled personnel that mm-hmm. needs to take care of the drone mission that it's successful. So I'm not going to go there. Then drone itself is just an electronic, it's a platform. It needs some enabling technology so that it can accomplish its mission. So if it doesn't have internet signal from commercial satellites, it needs to be connected. It needs to have this lower space infrastructure. As I mentioned, in connection with the previous point, if the drone is sent to attack during night, well, it needs infrared sensors. Mm-hmm. Yet another data connectivity to send the actual drone intelligence down to the command. So all these like little details, but still it all fits into the picture of a drone warfare, which is not just about drone technology.
Two points that you raised that I think are often overlooked when we talk about drones and when we talk about game changing. And two points that I've beat the drum on pretty hard is that they can't capture technology or they can't capture territory. And they can't push forces away, right? And this is part of the problem with this focus that we have also on things like HIMARS and rockets and artillery, Like, you can shoot at stuff all day long, but if you don't have a force coming in on the ground behind it to physically push and clear a hostile force off the ground, most of the time what you're going to have is that, you know, that force that you're trying to clear from the ground just go underground or hide out or wait out whatever's attacking it from above. And so this is where I think if you remove the term drone and you just use the idea attack from above, right? Mm-hmm. And so anything like artillery, rockets, missiles, drones, any of that, if you use the idea attack from above and you apply that to the force on the ground that's being attacked, they're going to just hunker down and wait out that attack and still be there. And so this is why it's important to think about those attacks from above have to be used in conjunction with a clearing land force. And to your point, they can't take territory. You have to use drones in conjunction with a clearing land force. And if you just use drones without that, you're not going to have that complementary capability. And that goes back to the point that I've raised on the podcast many times. You know, they're just a, if used correctly, drones are a complementary element of combined arms warfare. If used incorrectly, they are not, right? And this is why I don't think in many cases when folks think about drones as being revolutionary, they're not thinking, yeah,
it's
they're not.
Kind of a visual thinking, right?
Yeah, they're not. Yeah, they're not using that. They're not using them in that complementary way of thinking about them in terms of combined arms. And so that's where I think going back to, and this is one of the episodes of the podcast at the end of season two that was labeled or titled, it takes a land force to defeat a land force. Like, you have to think in those terms. And so I'm glad that you raised that point. And I was actually going to go highlight that point because that was one of the specific terms or phrases you used in the paper. I highlighted it specifically. I'm trying to look at it real quick. I wrote it in my notes. You can't capture territory. So I'm glad that you mentioned that because that's something that I was hoping you would specifically pull out. So,
if I may, I also really like that you stress the non-kinetic effect of drones, yeah. And the intimidation and the basically spreading the fear of some imminent attack from above. And stressing the importance of a verticality in land operation, and that meaning that the land forces also need to develop more disperse, conceal kind of tactics, because you never know when the drone is going to attack, and that's pretty dreadful.
Yeah, and that's where I think to take this for a moment into the theoretical realm. I think this is where. And having been like an armor, a tank officer in the U.S. Army, this is where I think you see this is why attritional wars develop. So is land forces know that they're going to get attacked from above. They dig in, right? And so this is why, you know, the Russian army, for instance, in Ukraine, it started digging in because the offensive capability, the offensive ability was blunted by the Ukrainians, right? They could no longer go forward. And so it's illogical if you can't go forward any longer and you're getting attacked from above, it's illogical to just sit out in the open. So inevitably you start digging in, right? And so when you start digging in and you're still getting attacked from above, those attacks become less effective. And so then you get this long battle of attrition where you're getting attacked from above and everything becomes less effective, but those attacks continue. And so you get this long grinding battle of indecision or this long grinding war of indecision. I don't want to say comical, but it's almost illogical for policymakers and military leaders to be like, huh, why is this war now at this place of stasis, you know, where there's indecision along the front, but it's a logical dynamic that evolves when this type of situation develops. But anyway, to your point on cost too, I think you raise an important point there too. The more that we start strapping on things, you can only put so many things on a small little drone for one thing. You can put all sorts of things on these big male drones, right? Because they're, you know, they have the capability to physically lift and carry a lot of different things, but the smaller
over long distances,
right? Yeah, but the smaller FPV drones that you can buy at, you know, off Amazon or at what used to be Radio Shack. I don't even know if that joke resonates anymore with many people, but at a hardware store, you can't put many things on those because they just don't have the physical strength, to be able to carry a lot of stuff. Yeah, the more that you put on them, the less they can do. And, Anthony King, he was on a couple episodes ago talking about something very similar because he had a paper about Robot Wars that came out, and we were talking about that. And he was saying they have limited capability for munitions, right? They can only carry a small weight of munitions, and so because of that too, they have limited destructive capability. And so in that aspect, to call them game-changing as well, the destructive capacity that these things have is very limited as well.
Well, that's a very interesting point that you are raising, and I've been thinking about that a lot in terms of cost and how this is probably the most important.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Important change those drones brought, because as you correctly pointed out, when the dynamic of the war changed to the phase of attrition, where the cost becomes really important, this is where the drones come in and why observers, analysts are really underlying their role there, because they, as you said, they are very easily accessible from internet or commercially available, right? They cost few hundred bucks. They can be assembled in garages, right? And the thing is that they also easily operate, user friendly, let's say.
Yeah.
Which means that they are easily replaceable. You don't need demanding training to operate them. And the point being that suddenly the platform itself, it's not important. It's about how you can scale it up, how quickly you can produce it, and how well you can occupy the airspace with these small platforms. And that's what the small drone that are commercially available, very like a low-end innovation, inexpensive. This is what is really interesting. And I don't think it's about the drone revolutionizing anything, but it's about how import of commercial technology on the battlefield is changing the dynamic.
I think that's a good place to jump over to your other paper, the Drones Have Boots paper. And there's a line in this that I think that fits really well with what you just said. It says, "The war in Ukraine has shown a drone script that differs from the main preoccupations of the security studies community. Instead of advanced million-dollar large drones that form the basis of the theoretical literature, small low-tech drones of commercial origins are changing dynamics on the battlefields of Ukraine." So I think that's almost exactly what you just said. I should have put that in before you said what you just said. Do you care to elaborate a bit more on that?
Well, I mean, what I can add to everything we just said.
Yeah.
Is basically the logic of employing the uncrewed systems is different. Like from the previous drone wars, it was really about keeping soldiers from harm's way.
Yep.
Instead of sending boots, send a machine.
Yep.
You can even like operate them or like thousands of kilometers away from the control station, and it was to let's say to please a risk-averse politicians, because that's, with casualties you can win votes. And it's a completely different picture in Ukraine. You send those drones because they are cheap, because you don't send a human to explore the terrain, you send a machine to see over the hill. That didn't change, but what changes is really that the drone is present on the battlefield itself together with the troops. Scale, like it's sized down, or how to say it, you know, it's not a large one, but it's a small one, meaning it's empowering the individual soldier that is fighting on the ground. It's not an operator away from the conflict zone.
Yeah.
And it's really about cost per effect. It's really different. And here...
It's a human integrated team far more so than a... it's almost... I'm trying to think of a way to say it. It's getting that machine tightly coupled with the human formation, as opposed to it being something that's being operated from a trailer in Nevada that's floating around in the desert in Afghanistan killing a guy on a bicycle.
But again, it comes with the changes not only in the mission but in the platform itself. But it's not military grade super exquisite platform that basically, yes, Ukrainians had something like the Turkish drones in the beginning of the war. But you see, like, how the war progresses, of course you're reluctant to send those super expensive gadgets because, you know, you're going to lose them. So instead, you change the tactic and you send the inexpensive stuff that is doing what you need to do. It's providing intelligence. It strikes targets. It becomes ammunition. The drone is loitering munitions or the first person view drones. So this is all very like on the ground kind of innovation in how you apply that available technology.
Yeah, it's become almost a disposable attritional not autonomous system. It's a tethered. It's like a dual use reconnaissance strike platform that's at the fore. It's making contact with the enemy, in this case the Russians in the Ukrainian sense. But it's that very low cost, when we look big picture, low cost thing that allows you to make contact. You lose it, it's no big deal because it's cheap. It's easy to be reproduced, and it's not a human life that's being lost. So you can quickly spend another hundred, you know, however many $100 it is.
Exactly. Like those one-way attack drones, I call them a human navigated munition.
Yeah, yeah, that, and they're providing intelligence, you know, real-time intelligence that can quickly be used to do other things, and theoretically, you know, they're getting saving lives, Ukrainian lives on the front, and you know, they're far more useful, and so I think that go ahead.
Yes. No. So this is just to underline the fact that of course they are useful. Of course they help our comparative advantage, and that's why. Being seen like thousands of them deployed on the battlefield.
Yeah.
But we need to like manage the expectations. What is it that they are able to do, where they make the difference? And calling them revolutionary only obscures our understanding and then the correct employment of this weapon technology.
I think your point's spot on with managing expectations and not calling them revolutionary, but seeing how those limitations and capabilities can actually fit into what it is we're thinking about with the future. And I know that Western militaries, as they're looking at how to integrate robotics and autonomous systems and semi-autonomous systems and drones into the future, and how Western militaries operate in the future, human-machine integrated operations and human-machine integrated formations are one of the things that they're looking at deeply. And this idea that you just outlined in terms of coupling those formation or those capabilities, the drones, cheap disposable drones, attritional drones, if you will, with human formations and human operators very far forward at the front, so that they can get that tight coupling of strike intelligence and information sharing, is something that Western militaries are looking at very closely. And so, go ahead.
Yeah, because like, that's like developing new ways, not how to coexist, but in like
I think coexist is probably not a bad way to phrase it.
Yeah, well, like how to make the technology work for the operator. Of course, it's great that it's so available that like individuals can operate their own. Yeah. But at the same time, it would be nice to know how to avoid being spotted because you are operating the drone and leaving some digital footprint. It all comes with specific set of risks. So
there's a highly technical phrase often used in the U.S. Army specifically when we talk about this, and it's called "don't lead with your face." And so I know as the U.S. Army specifically looks at this problem, this is one of the things when they look at how to integrate drones and human machine.
Yes, they are calling drones the new cigarette in the trench.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. You know, and so not leading with your face is one of the ways in which we're trying to get this idea figured out. And so I think with that, one of the last questions pertaining to your paper here, Drones Have Boots, is this last section, or one of the last sections in your paper you have, is droning on toward improved theory. And I know we've touched on it a bit here. What are some ways that you think we can drone on towards improved theory as it relates to this idea?
Yeah, and also sorry about those buzzwords there.
No, it's great. I love it. That was good.
Well, my point there was again bring back the drone diversity because that was a natural development in the field of international security studies that drone warfare were like the visible face of counterterrorist operations. So of course, all the theory have been developed around these large platforms and the challenges of technology and adoption and these things and what are the coercive effects. But at the same time, those smaller size drones like class one or two went kind of under radar they were really regarded as just a drone threat that Western militaries have to defend against.
Yeah.
And I was little thinking about how they can actually be a useful tactical asset in operations. So I believe like in this sense, there is more that the scholarly literature and research can offer, especially if we can address the question of when the technology is revolutionary or not, and how the cost becomes the main factor in drone deployments.
So I know this, I don't even know, 2 days ago, Iran attacked Israel with several quite the understatement, many drones, among other things. What does your research say about how Iran's attack fits with what you've seen over the past couple of years as it relates to what's going on in Ukraine?
Okay, so if we look at that recent attack, well, unprecedented in fact, because it came directly from Iran, through the lenses of what we just talked about, why the drones are being deployed in such a huge numbers recently, we haven't even talked about Russia using those loitering munitions the Shah has very probably used in against Israel. I would say that we know that Iran has a substantial drone industry, domestic production of drones. So that wasn't surprising. Also, how I would read the situation is that I'm sure Iran knew that Israel is well able to be defending itself against those drones. So for Iran, it was a very inexpensive way to show to its Iranian domestic audience that, they are retaliating, but at the same time, they haven't went up on the escalation ladder. Because then Israel will be able to defend.
Yeah.
Those drones were basically for the show.
Yeah, in this context. Throwaway type situation for them.
Kind of, yes. So I would say that's one point. But also, on the other hand, with this inexpensive way, Iran kind of could read now how well Israel is able to use those air defenses and which way, how it's functioning. So kind of reading the
yeah, it was an intelligence gathering operation almost for them too.
Exactly. So
that's interesting because that's it's almost similar to how the response was in the wake of the Soleimani killing too, when they Iran shot missiles at Al-Asad Air Base in Iraq, and I think Erbil Airfield after the U.S. killed Soleimani in whatever that was, 2020. Yeah. And it was very much a, hey, we're shooting these. We know that you know we're shooting these.
Exactly. Don't forget to look.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a signaling thing just to let you know that we know that you know we're shooting them. But the intelligence gathering side of it's certainly something that I think folks should pay attention to. All right. Well, I think that's it. Any other points you'd like to make on those topics before we move on?
Well, I would like to mention, I believe that with this debate about whether the drones are revolutionary or not, what is bothering me probably the most is that it distracts us from the real problem. Like, because I believe like if people are saying that, oh, look, these drones in Ukraine are so revolutionary, it's basically a very grim statement about the situation of the Ukrainians because they just don't have anything else. And that's why they can afford these cheap platforms to kind of, just survive. Because they don't have a much potent military kit to really push the aggressor back home. And that's what is bothering me.
Yeah, it's a stopgap in the absence of any other significant capabilities that they may have or don't have.
And then that's one point about this is exaggerating of what drones actually are about or not. Like the analysts that are driving on this hype is saying that drones are performing so well, we should probably replace artillery shells with drones, or we should just replace all the crewed aircraft with drones because that's gonna solve the problem. And I mean, this is a very dangerous thinking, just to cannibalize something that is working well because there is a new kid on the block. I would like to warn about this basically.
Yeah, well, again, that goes back to the whole idea of combined arms warfare and the whole idea of the effectiveness of joint warfare is that
drones are just one element on the battlefield. Like
The ability to bring in these multi-layered, multifaceted things. They're all complementary of one another. They don't replace one thing or the next. Yeah. And that's what I think folks forget.
And then it's really the question of the human ingenuity, like how well you can integrate this new weapon technology what you already have and how well it's going to work together. Like one paper I read recently, they put drones, digitized command control, and the new generation of sensors together, and this is the driving force of the transformation. So it's never just drones and on themselves. Yeah.
Well, it's interesting too. Like I was a scientist at work one day was hitting me up, and it was similar conversation where he's like, "Hey, we should just." I kid you not. We should be replacing manned things with robots and drones. And I'm like, what are you talking about, man? And it was a straight up legitimate argument that this guy was trying to make. And I'm like, then why even have wars if robots are fighting robots? It was very much like, I don't know if you remember that old Star Trek episode where they just had people go into this incinerator. And it was like whatever Star Trek country called whatever Star Trek country, and they're like, all right, now you need to send your X number of thousand people into the incinerator, and that's how they would fight their wars. And there was no actual war, it was just people would go off into the incinerator. Right. And Captain Kirk was like, what are you guys doing? That's how I feel about these robot war ideas. If robots are just fighting robots, what's the point?
I would suggest to the scientists to read Clausewitz again.
I agree. I'm not a Trekkie, by the way, for anybody that's now making that assertion. It's just an interesting episode of Star Trek that I happened to see when I was younger.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So any other hot takes you'd like to mention? Anything out there that's that you hear people saying that gets under your skin that you'd like to refute?
Oh, well, I think I did my mental hygiene, so.
you're good. You got a good scrub. All right. Well, I think that's it for today then, Dominika. I'd like to thank you for your time. I appreciate it. It's been fun. I think hopefully we're setting people's minds a little straight here on revolution versus evolutionary. Mm-hmm. And again, I think it's important to understand that, like you said, and my big takeaway is, you know, drones are great. I agree. But at the end of the day, most wars are fought for land, and drones can't take territory. So, like, they help, but they are not, like, the end-all be-all, and we need to keep that in mind. So, Dominika, thanks for your time.
Thank you for having me. And then, exactly, like, war is still very much a human affair. So
yep.
Let's focus on that. And not be a very techno-religion.
That's right. And I am not a Trekkie.
Well, have a good day.
All right, you too. Thanks.
Here's a question for the marketers listening. Want to find that perfect customer beyond the world of scrolling, swiping, and searching? Here's a secret to make sparks fly. Smooth talking with podcast ads. With Acast, you can reach millions of listeners who'll be hanging on your every word. On the train to work, in the gym, or waiting in line for coffee. Start up the conversation with podcast listeners anywhere and everywhere. And they're looking for love. 60% of listeners have a higher trust in brands they've met on podcasts compared to social. Get closer to your audience. Make podcast ads with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.